active fighting and makes clear statements about their own needs, desires, and beliefs, the other person usually shifts their behavior in response. This happens in all relationships. But when one of the people has BPD, it is crucial to anticipate the ways in which he or she might react to the changes you are making. People with BPD try to manage their pain through their interactions with other people. As we have explained, projections, rages, criticism, blaming, and other defense mechanisms may be attempts to get you to feel their pain for them. When you assertively redirect the pain back to the BP so he or she can begin to deal with it, you are breaking a contract that you didn't know you signed. Naturally, the person with BPD will find this distressing. The BP will probably make a countermove. This is an action designed to restore things to the way they were. Countermoves also help people justify their actions, both to themselves and to you. This element is crucial because it seems to make the blackmail acceptable, even noble. Your ability to withstand these countermoves will determine the future course of your relationship. According to Harriet Lerner, people react to limit setting in three predictable and successive steps: mild disagreement, intense disagreement, and threats. Be aware that someone with BPD, however, may skip right to threats. In our discussion of these steps, we will focus on mild and intense disagreement. In Chapter 8, we'll discuss unsafe threats. How to respond to mild disagreement. Following are some countermove tactics discussed by Susan Forward and Donna Fraser in Emotional Blackmail. The spin. The blackmailer tells you that his or her motivations are pure and honorable, while yours are underhanded, unscrupulous, and self-serving. It's common for non-BPs who set limits to be split into the bad person. Labeling. The blackmailer calls you names that reinforce his or her spun viewpoint and undermine your sense of reality. Many of these are actually projections. Pathologizing. The blackmailer tries to convince you that you are not just acting bad, you are bad, or sick, messed up, damaged, etc. The higher the stakes, the more likely it is that this will happen. Many non-BPs told us that the BPs in their lives accused them of having BPD. Enlisting allies. The blackmailer asks other people to pressure you. This seems to be most common when the BP is a parent. In one case, a borderline mother showed up at her daughter's door with four relatives to back her up. When responding, it's important to stay away from arguments about whether your limits are right or wrong. Here are some sample responses to some typical statements. BP. You're a bad, selfish, etc. person for making this request. Non-BP. I understand you think that I'm a bad person, but I feel good about myself, and I'm proud that I respect myself enough to set this limit. BP. You must hate me. Non-BP. No, I don't. In fact, I care about you so much that I want to work together to make our relationship better. I also care for and respect myself, which is why I'm bringing this up. BP. You're manipulative and controlling. Non-BP. I understand that you think I'm manipulative and controlling. I feel it's your job to make choices and decide how you want to act, and it's my job to think about the things I'm comfortable with and the things I'm not. I've thought about this a great deal, and this is very important to me and my own self-respect. BP. You shouldn't feel that way. Non-BP. Perhaps if you were in my position, you wouldn't feel this way. We're two different people, and we each have our own beliefs, feelings, and opinions. I am asking you to respect my feelings, even if you don't share them. BP. You're the child. I'm the parent. Non-BP. I am your child, and I'm not a little girl, boy, anymore. I'm an adult, and it's time for me to make my own decisions based on my own feelings and beliefs. You may not agree with me, and that's your right. It's my right to act in ways that respect myself. Other non-argumentative responses include, that's your choice. I would like to talk about this later when things have calmed down. I need to think about this more. There are no villains here. We just see things differently. I'm not willing to take more than 50% of the responsibility. I know you don't like this, but it's not negotiable. I know you want an answer right now, but I need time to think. I won't be put in the middle. You need to work that out with them. How to respond to intense disagreement. When the VP increases the intensity of his or her responses, the implicit message is, you are taking away my method of coping, and I cannot stand these feelings, so change back. If the VP shouted before, he may now rage out of control. If he previously accused you of being selfish, now he will call you the most self-centered, egotistical, and controlling person in the world. If she coped by using violence, either against herself or others, the violence may become more severe. Chapter 8 will address how to protect yourself from violence. Remember, countermoves are normal. It is important to remember that countermoves are not a sign that what you did was wrong or did not work. It means that you have asked the BP to do something difficult. Nobody likes doing things that make them uncomfortable. It is possible that over time, your limit setting will lead to the BP taking a hard look at themselves and deciding to seek help. Or the BP could devalue you, accuse you of abandoning him, and claim that he never wants to see you again. Or he could do both. Whatever happens, it is possible that it would have happened eventually anyway. Your actions may just have accelerated the pace of things. Persisting. If your limits aren't observed. If you want the BP to change, you have to be willing to make some changes yourself if the person does not observe your limits. Think about the things you can do, not the things you feel you can't do. Be creative. Here are some examples. You can change the subject or refuse to discuss the matter. You can leave the room or hang up the phone. You can change your phone number, get caller ID, or change the door locks. You can go in your room and shut the door. You can be with the person only when a third party is present. You can refuse to read the person's mail or email. You can change your email address. You can stop the car or refuse to drive with the person. You can say no firmly without changing your mind. You can ask for help from therapists or friends, even if the BP doesn't want you to do so. You can call a crisis line or shelter. You can call the police and get a restraining order. You can stop seeing the person for a while or break off the relationship altogether. You can find alternate places for a child to stay, example given, a group home with a distant relative, etc. You can take steps to protect children from abusive situations, example given, taking the kids out when the BP is raging, reporting child abuse, and seeking sole custody. Naturally, all of these things will be perceived as abandonment by the person with BPD. That's why you may need to gently point out that you are not acting against the person, you are acting for yourself. Explain that your limits are essential to the health of the relationship and that you are asking the BP to observe them so you can be with him or her for a very long time. Consistency is the key. Within reason, we suggest you observe your limits in a gentle way every time, even when you're tired or when you'd rather avoid a fight. You may not always be able to take immediate action, but you can't let unacceptable behavior go unnoticed, or you may actually reinforce it. Again, preparation is key. Think through the what-ifs and decide ahead of time, if you can, what steps you will take in each case. Use caution and seek help. BPD is a serious personality disorder. It is crucial that you seek outside help from a competent mental health professional if you have any reason to believe that the countermoves may be more severe than you can handle alone. Here are some specifics on getting help. Consult a qualified professional. If children are involved, we strongly suggest that you consult with a qualified mental health professional about how to best protect children under difficult circumstances. It is essential that this person be knowledgeable about both BPD and issues involving children. If this person's recommendations go against your gut instincts, you may wish to get a second opinion. Remember, each person with BPD is different, and each child is different. Seek legal counsel if needed. If you are a parent who is worried about visitation, custody, or false accusations, we strongly recommend talking with an attorney who is familiar with personality disorders before you make any sudden moves. It is crucial that anyone you consult with is familiar with these types of situations and has dealt with them successfully. Prepare emotionally. If the BP in your life is your parent and you were physically or emotionally abused as a child, we suggest that you work with a mental health professional to make sure that you are emotionally ready to ask your parent to observe your limits and that you are prepared for any response he or she might have. Whatever your circumstances, you may need a great deal of love, support, and validation as you stand up for yourself. Some of the important people in your life may be able to support you. Ask for their help. Other people may disagree with your actions because they feel it threatens their own relationship with the BP or because it contradicts their own firmly held beliefs about how things should be. This is normal. Acknowledge their right to have their own opinions and express your desire to keep your relationship with them separate from your relationship with the BP. Measure your success by the things you can control. The person with BPD in your life may or may not respond as you would like during any one particular conversation. This is beyond your control, so measure your success by the factors you can control. Ask yourself, did you respond as an adult, not as a child? Did you act in a way that demonstrates your self-respect? Were you clear about your position? Did you remain focused, even if the BP tried to draw you off track? Did you remain calm and composed? Did you refuse to be baited and drawn into a losing argument? Were you considerate of the other person's feelings, even if he or she did not give you the same consideration? Did you maintain a firm grip on your own reality while maintaining an open mind toward the BP's concerns? If you can answer yes to any of these questions, pat yourself on the back. We've covered a great deal in this chapter. Don't try to absorb it all at once. It may seem overwhelming now, but you can change the way you interact with the BP in your life. Just remember these key points. You're asserting your limits for the long-term health of the relationship, not just for yourself. Be a mirror, not a sponge. Stay on track. Don't let the BP distract you from your communication goals. Feel good about the steps you've taken. You've come a long way. In the next chapter, we'll discuss what to do when the BP's behavior becomes unsafe. Chapter 8. Creating a Safety Plan.
Yeah, make your arm bleed. Bang your forehead on the headboard. Harder, harder. Scream at those you love until they slink off terrified of you, the traitors. Burn your fingers on the stove. Prick your hand with a pin over and over and over and over. Take those pills. Buy more. Stock up. This might just be the big eclipse. Melissa Ford Thornton, Eclipses, Behind the Borderline Personality Disorder. Rages, physical abuse, self-mutilation, and suicide threats are the most isolating, frightening kinds of behaviors non-BPs must contend with from the BPs in their lives. Sometimes non-BPs also rage, become abusive, or consider suicide. The keys to managing these difficult situations are planning and obtaining outside help. Hopefully, your behavior will encourage the BP to get the professional assistance he or she desperately needs. Out-of-control rages. Borderline rages can be terrifying. The BP may be completely out of control, acting on impulse, and heedless of the consequences of his or her behavior. Karen Ann, BP. When I am angry, I can't think rationally. I'm possessed by emotions that cause me to act out viciously. The feelings overpower me, and I have to lash out to let them escape. It's an attempt to protect myself, knowing that what I am doing will drive a person further away. Dick, BP. When I rage at people, they are no longer real people with real feelings. They become the object of my hatred and the cause of my distress. They are the enemy. I get paranoid and believe they want to hurt me, and I am determined to strike out to prove control over them. Laura, BP. I think that borderlines are concerned about only one thing, losing love. When I am cornered, I get very scared, and I show that by getting angry. Anger is easier than fear and makes me feel less vulnerable. I strike before being struck. Rage and logic don't mix. In our interview with clinician Jane Dresser, RN, she said, "When someone with BPD is highly emotionally aroused, do not expect them to act in a logical way. It isn't going to happen, not because they're not willing to, but because they cannot." Dresser notes that when people who have experienced trauma are emotionally aroused, the logic centers of their brains do not seem to function as well. This finding is not a surprise to most non-BPs, who find reasoning with an enraged BP pointless and frustrating. The time for rational discussion is later, when both you and the BP have calmed down. Dresser also points out that because some people with BPD do not have the capacity to regulate their emotions, all anger has the same intensity. A mild irritation seems indistinguishable from an impassioned fury. Dresser suggests, "Sometimes it's important to ask the person with BPD, on a scale of 1 to 10, how mad are you? What to do? During a rage, the best thing to do is temporarily remove yourself and any children from the situation. In our interview with Margaret Pofall, ACSW, she suggested that non-BPs say calmly, "I will not discuss this further with you if you continue to yell and scream at me. I am willing to be supportive if you can calmly tell me what it is that you want or need." Note that you've given the BP a choice and made it clear that his or her actions will be responsible for your temporary withdrawal. If the raging continues, immediately retreat to safer ground. Here are some ways to do this. Retire to a room that is off-limits to everyone else. Call a friend and go to his or her house. Call a relative and have him or her come to your house. Take the kids and go to a movie. Put on some headphones and listen to music. Take a taxi home. Turn on the answering machine or disconnect the phone and take a hot bath. Refuse to read the BP's letters or email. If the BP in your life routinely loses control, think through your options now and make concrete plans for the next time he or she flies into a rage. Make arrangements to leave quickly if you need to. For example, know the location of your purse or wallet or have the phone number of a friend written near the phone. What not to do. It's important that you don't continue to ignore or accept rages. Realize that extreme rage directed at you or your children is verbal and emotional abuse. Even if you think you can handle it, over time it can erode your self-esteem and poison the relationship. Seek support immediately. It is in your own best interest not to respond to borderline anger with rage of your own. Corey F. Newman, Ph.D., who treats many BPs and non-BPs, said during our interview, "This will escalate the pattern of hostility and coercive control. When you fight fire with fire, the problem gets worse and nothing is resolved." Remember that the BP may be trying to provoke you into anger, consciously or unconsciously. If you find yourself losing control, stop and leave the scene. If you do get angry, however, don't be too hard on yourself. It's human nature to want to fight back. Just tell yourself that you'll try to be calmer next time. You probably know how to fight back and say things hurtful to the BP, and retaliation can be tempting in the face of a rage. However, try not to push the BP's shame or invalidation buttons if you can help it. Comments like, "You have no right to be angry," can make things worse. You can't control the BP's actions, but with the knowledge that you handled his or her rage well, you can feel good about yourself. Don't take out your frustration on other people. This is another reason why enduring abusive behavior is a bad idea. When you try to swallow your feelings, they usually end up surfacing elsewhere in a way you didn't expect. This can leave you even more isolated in the long run. Set personal limits around rages. What you learned in the last chapter about setting limits applies when it comes to rages, too. If possible, try the following. Discuss your limits with the BP beforehand so the two of you have a shared understanding of what steps you're going to take the next time this happens. Set this limit when things are on an even keel, using the communication tools described in the last chapter. Assure the BP that if you leave, you will be back. Explain that the BP has some control in the matter. If he or she chooses to calm down, you will stay. If the BP chooses to rage at you, you may leave and return when things are calmer. The decision is the BP's. Before you implement the plan, review the information in Chapter 7 about responding to countermoves. You must be prepared for any escalation. And remember the importance of consistency. In our interview with therapist Margaret Pofall, she said, "If you say today that you are not going to take angry blaming, then tomorrow you cannot take it either. Otherwise, you may intermittently reinforce the behavior." The BP may apologize sincerely and then repeat the behavior the next time he gets angry. This may be because the BP doesn't have the tools he needs to calm down and choose another course of action. If the BP won't seek help or keeps repeating the behavior, you may need to decide what you will and will not accept in the relationship. It's up to you. Suggestions from people with BPD. Many BPs have given us suggestions to pass on to non-BPs who must bear the brunt of borderline rages. Evaluate these recommendations in light of your own unique circumstances. Because each person and situation is different, these suggestions may or may not work for you. You may wish to discuss them with a therapist. Chris, BP. When people try to calm me down, it only makes me feel more angry and invalidated, like they are telling me that I shouldn't feel the way I do. I feel this way even if I intellectually understand that they did not mean things the way I've interpreted them. Laura, BP. The only thing that helps me get less angry is when my husband says to me, "I know you are scared, not angry," and gives me a hug. At that moment, my anger melts away and I can feel my fear again. Reacting in anger only makes it worse. Jean, BP. If a borderline is being dangerous, others better stay away until things are safe. Let the borderline know that anger is okay and normal, but that he or she needs to express it in ways that do not attack another person's self-esteem. Annie, BP. When I am angry, the best thing someone can do to make me feel better is to listen to me. A lot of current literature on BPD encourages others to ignore what the borderline is saying because supposedly they do not know what the truth is or they are manipulative. My anger is caused by others not listening to me or believing me. It makes me feel as if I don't exist. Physical abuse. In our interview with Don Dutton, a psychologist and researcher at the University of British Columbia, he estimated that about 30% of men who batter their partners or children have BPD. The percentage of physically abusive women who have BPD is probably much higher. Take all forms and instances of physical violence very seriously, even if it never happened before and you doubt that it will happen again. The potential is there for the violence to escalate. Children who witness violence experience many of the same ill effects as those who are directly abused. You must be prepared. Space limitations prevent us from listing all the steps that victims of domestic violence should take to protect themselves and their children, but the information is widely available from shelters, crisis intervention programs, and online. Search under domestic abuse or crisis intervention in the yellow pages of the phone book or using a search engine. Plan what you will do if the situation arises again. Find out your legal options. Male victims. Family violence is a recognized serious problem for women. The subject of battered men, however, often remains quiet or is viewed as a joke. A cartoon image of a heavy-set woman in curlers and a robe wielding a rolling pin, while a tiny, undignified man covers his head with his hands and runs away. But non-BP men have reported being slapped, scratched, punched, clawed, and stabbed with small objects by the BPs in their lives. One man was tripped and fell down a flight of stairs. Mike, non-BP. Sometimes when my ex-wife was in a rage, she would claw me, smash me across the side of the head, and punch me in the chest. I'm 6'3" tall and weigh 215, yet she could knock the wind out of me. My father taught me not to hit a woman. So what was I supposed to do? Men who are physically attacked by women may not see themselves as having a problem. More often, they see the woman as the one with the problem. Many men also believe they should suffer in silence to protect the abuser or avoid being embarrassed. When men do realize they need help, they are often unable to find it in a society that does not believe or understand their complaint as credible. This hurts the non-BPs and denies the violent women the opportunity to get help of their own. If you are a man who is being battered, we have some suggestions for how you can address and cope with the situation. 1. Do not, under any circumstances, hurt the other person. This goes double if you are bigger or stronger than the BP. Maintain control of yourself and remain calm at all times, especially when talking to authorities. 2. Organizations involved with domestic violence vary tremendously as to their attitudes about the physical abuse of men by women. However, reports of battered men are not as uncommon as you might think. Some come from men battered by other men, usually a gay partner or male relative. If you're being battered, don't wait for an emergency to discover the attitudes of the police, justice system, and social service agencies in your town. Talk to someone now. 3. Consult with legal resources about documenting the abuse and protecting yourself and your children. Know your legal rights and responsibilities. Don't make assumptions or go on advice from a friend of a friend. Find out the facts and be assertive about using your resources to protect yourself. Self-mutilation. Non-BPs may feel frightened, angry, frustrated, disgusted, and helpless in the face of borderlines who mutilate themselves. Responding to such behavior requires a balancing act. You should be concerned and supportive without unintentionally rewarding the behavior or making the person feel even more ashamed. What not to do. Don't take responsibility for someone else's actions. You did not cause this to happen. If an event that involved you preceded the episode, recall the difference between causes and triggers. Chapter 5. While you can do your best to provide a safe environment, realize that you can't remove every potentially sharp object in the house or watch the BP 24 hours a day. As the mother of a borderline teen says, "If my daughter is determined to hurt herself, she will." Don't try to be the person's therapist. Leave that to the professionals. Don't keep weapons such as guns in the house. Don't define the person with BPD in terms of the self-mutilation. It is something the BP does, not something the BP is. Don't dwell on the details of self-injury when discussing it with the person. Self-harm can be addictive. You don't want to trigger the behavior. In our interview with Corey F. Newman, Ph.D., he said, "Addictive behaviors can be cued, such as when a cigarette smoker craves a smoke when he hears someone else talking about lighting up. However, this doesn't mean that it's your fault if the person with BPD engages in self-mutilating behavior after you confront them about it. I am merely stating that you have to handle dynamite with great care." Don't moralize, preach, or act disgusted. One woman who hurts herself says, "My friends lecture me about self-injury, as if I didn't know it was wrong. What if I were overweight? Would they follow me around and slap my hand every time I reached for a candy bar?" Don't say things designed to evoke shame or guilt, such as, "How could you?" The BP already feels ashamed. Don't make threats in an angry or controlling way. "If you do this again, I'm leaving you." This may come across as punishing. Even if you choose to set this limit, it should come across as something you are doing for yourself, not something against the other person. For example, during times when you're both calm, you could explain which actions you cannot tolerate and which of these will force you to leave the relationship. What to do? If the BP threatens to harm themselves or others, notify the person's therapist, if they have one, at the earliest possible time. You, the BP, and the therapist may all want to meet to discuss how you will handle self-harm in the future. If this is not possible, seek professional help on your own to discuss how to handle the situation. If you believe that the BP may be a danger to himself or herself or others, the BP may need to be evaluated for hospitalization. Remain calm and speak in a calm and matter-of-fact way. In Lost in the Mirror, Richard Moskowitz says, "Since self-mutilation usually occurs when the borderline feels out of control, it is important that those around them do not add to the inner chaos with their own panic. Moskowitz points out that although the behavior may be shocking and new to you, it may have been going on for a long time. Seek appropriate medical treatment for the BP if warranted. You may wish to call medical professionals to obtain their advice. In our interview with Elise M. Benham, MS, she said, "This also needs to be handled in a supportive, yet composed and factual manner. What I usually say is, let's take care of this, or I'm going to take you to the doctor and have them check this out." Help the BP put together a support team so you don't feel overburdened and exhausted. The first person should be the BP's therapist, who can work with the BP to reduce self-harm. Empathize with and listen to the BP. Show that you are trying to understand how she feels. Ask questions in a concerned way, such as, "How are you feeling?" and "Is there anything I can do?" Don't underestimate the BP's fear, anguish, and inner turmoil. Imagine the worst you have ever felt, and then triple it. Emphasize messages of love and acceptance for the person, while making it clear that you wish she would find another way of handling problems. One BP suggests saying, "I feel helpless and angry when you hurt yourself. I want to understand this, even though I don't fully. But I know I don't want you to do this anymore, and if you feel those urges again, please talk to me or call your therapist." Stress the positive and offer encouragement. Example given, "Before you did this, you went 14 days without cutting yourself, and I know you can get back on track." Suggest alternatives to self-harm, such as squeezing ice, plunging his or her hands into very cold water, heavy exercise, biting into something strongly flavored, hot peppers or unpeeled lemon, lime, or grapefruit, or other activities that produce an intense sensation that is not harmful. However, realize that using these alternatives, or not, is up to the BP. Refuse to be put in no-win situations. For example, promising not to seek outside help because the BP is embarrassed and ashamed. This is unfair to you both. If the BP insists that you keep the self-mutilation a secret from people who could help, point out that you are not qualified to handle this on your own. See the upcoming section in Chapter 8 for no-win situations involving suicide threats. If you start to feel consumed by the BP's behaviors, step back. You may be exaggerating the influence you have on the person's self-mutilating behaviors. The best way to be there to support the BP in the long run is to make sure that, in the short run, you're taking care of yourself. Set personal limits around self-harm. As with rages, planning and setting limits beforehand is the key to reclaiming your own life when someone you care about hurts himself or herself. Make sure that you can follow through with the consequences that you set. Penny, BP. My therapist taught me to tell my friends that if I contacted them before doing anything self-destructive, they could talk to me and reassure me if they wanted to do so. But if I contacted them during or after doing something, like drinking or cutting, they were to simply say, "Penny, I love you, but I'm absolutely not going to deal with you when you're like this." Then they were to hang up and refuse to accept any contact with me while I was in that condition. They wouldn't feel pressured to be my caretakers, and so our friendship would have a better chance of surviving because of less stress placed upon it. It also kept my self-destructive behavior from being reinforced, because drinking and cutting would no longer be rewarded with solicitude from my friends. A phone call before the fact has so far been sufficient to prevent relapses. I dread the dial tone and what it represents enough to find other ways of coping. Plus, my friends have said that this contingency plan relieved them considerably, because they knew they wouldn't have to feel guilty about abandoning me. Karen, non-BP. My husband Eric's self-harm used to hurt me more than it hurt him. He sensed this, and when nothing else worked and he felt awful and couldn't get what he wanted, he would self-harm. The guilt trips were powerful and controlling my life, but I refused to keep being put in this position. I told him clearly when he was calm that I was not taking responsibility for his actions. If I saw blood, I was calling an ambulance and leaving. If I stayed and soothed him, I would be enabling him. He knows that if he doesn't want to be alone, he has to maintain that boundary. Eric's therapist and I each made separate contracts with him not to self-harm. He He values his honor and honesty, so this works.
Suicide threats.
According to the DSM-4-TR, 8 to 10% of all people with BPD commit suicide. Of the 6 million people in North America who have the disorder, 180,000 to 600,000 will die by their own hands. This number is equivalent to a Titanic sinking every day for between 4 months and a year. According to Beth Brodsky and John Mann, when compared to people with depression or schizophrenia, borderlines are more likely to make non-lethal suicide attempts, constantly think of suicide, and make repeated suicide threats. The presence of other illnesses, such as major depression, substance abuse, and eating disorders, seems to magnify the likelihood of actual suicide. If the BP in your life really wants to die, you need assistance beyond what we can provide in this book. Please seek immediate professional help. You may also wish to call a local crisis line or hospital emergency department and ask for guidance. Then, keep the phone numbers of these people and places right by the phone. Feeling manipulated by suicide threats. When the suicide threats appear to be an attempt to scare you or make you do something you don't want to do, your sympathy and concern may begin to dissolve into anger and resentment. For example, many non-BPs said that when their relationships with the BPs were over, the BPs implied that they would kill themselves if the non-BPs did not return. Non-BPs on the receiving end of these threats felt extremely guilty, confused, and worried. In their book, Choosing to Live, Thomas Ellis and Corey Newman explain, "The sense of collaboration and togetherness you once had with the suicidal person diminishes, while the uncomfortable power struggle increases. Comments like, 'If you really cared whether I lived or died, you would come back to me,' and 'You make me want to die,' have something in common. They make someone else's decision whether to live or die conditional on your response. This is unfair to both parties." Sometimes the BP will try to make you believe that you are responsible for his or her misery and that you will be to blame if he kills himself. Remind yourself that you are not threatening the other person with homicide. The other person is threatening suicide. You're dealing with someone who needs immediate professional attention much more than he or she needs your capitulation. What not to do? Newman and Ellis suggest avoiding the following actions with someone threatening suicide. Don't fight. Don't get into an argument with the BP about whether he or she is serious about wanting to die, even if you're angry and feel like venting. The person may attempt suicide simply to prove you wrong. Don't accuse. Don't confront the BP and accuse him or her of manipulating you. Again, this may turn into a power struggle. If the BP is asking you to do something that is against your better judgment, follow your instincts. However, if the two of you are in a session with a mental health professional, it can be helpful to talk about how this behavior is making you feel. Don't give in to threats. Be extremely cautious about relenting just to prove that you really care. Contrary to what an angry, distraught BP may be telling you, you don't have to prove anything. Say Ellis and Newman, "When you give in to the threats, you will still be angry, the BP will still be at risk for self-harm at any time, and the underlying issues will not have been addressed. Plus, it is likely that the same scenario will repeat itself again and again." Seek help for yourself. If you have a history of complying with demands because you believed that suicide was imminent, we suggest obtaining professional help for one or the both of you before the next crisis occurs. What to do? Suicide threats that feel manipulative are the ultimate in no-win situations. Whether you comply with the BP's wishes or not, the risks are unacceptable. So, Ellis and Newman say, the best thing to do is to simply refuse to be put in this position, despite the BP's attempts to make you feel responsible for his or her life and death. Just say no, following the guidelines below. Express your support and concern for the BP while firmly maintaining your personal limits. You can do both, even if the BP thinks otherwise. You can accomplish this with mirroring responses that put the choice of life or death back where it belongs, with the BP, while stating as strongly as possible that you care about the BP and you want them to choose life and seek help. Ellis and Newman give these sample responses, which we have paraphrased. In response to, "I'll kill myself if you leave me." "I'm not breaking up with you to be cruel. I'm very, very sorry that this hurts you. I want what's best for you in the future, but I just can't be part of it. And even if I were to stay with you, that wouldn't solve our problems. For one thing, your life's worth should be based on much more than just being in a relationship with me. Secondly, I know that you know deep inside that our relationship shouldn't be based on me staying because I'm afraid of you dying, and you staying because you think you can't live without me. That's not healthy. I care about you, and because I care about you, I want you to live, and I want you to find your own happiness and your own life's worth without me." In response to, "If you really cared whether I lived or died, you would come home every weekend." "The fact that I love you and am concerned about you is already beyond doubt. I feel like I have proven my love time and time again, and I suspect that even if I did come home every weekend, that wouldn't be enough for you. I want to see you, and I do plan on coming up once a month or so. The fact is that I can't visit every weekend because I have my own family now and my own life to attend to. Perhaps the answer is that you need more things to do on your own, or more friends you can get together with on Saturday and Sunday. You used to talk about a lady you played cards with from your church. Have you seen her lately?" These statements should be accompanied by statements that show that you are taking the threats of suicide very seriously. Show warmth and concern in your voice and actions. For example, you might say, "We have to get you to the hospital. This is a matter of life and death." Show that a serious threat warrants a serious response. In this way, you give appropriate attention to the BP's cry for help while making it clear that you aren't qualified to give the professional help that is necessary in such extreme situations. In certain circumstances, you may wish to enlist the support of other people in the BP's life, parents, relatives, friends, teachers, and so on. Don't keep this kind of behavior a secret. Find other people who are willing to support you and the BP. When the BP is your child. When a child or teenager becomes a danger to themselves or others, parents are often at a loss as to where to turn for help. Believing the child's behavior is always their responsibility, they may tolerate behaviors they would never accept in anyone else. If your child is violent to him or herself or others, it's all right to ask for help from therapists and other outside authorities, family and friends, crisis hotlines, treatment centers, and support groups. Admission to a treatment facility. Admission into a treatment facility is usually voluntary. The child must agree to treatment. However, if professionals believe that the child is a danger to him or herself or others, they and the police can authorize a legal commitment that can last from 24 to 72 hours. Sharon, who manages an internet support group for parents of children with BPD, says that some parents in her group are concerned that a child may be discharged before the parents feel the situation is really safe. In one instance, a prematurely discharged child took an overdose of pills and ended up back in the hospital. As a last resort, Sharon advises simply refusing to take the child home, even if the hospital protests. This, she feels, gives parents additional time to make other arrangements, such as residential care. However, the laws about this vary from state to state, and even from county to county. In some areas, you might be charged with neglect, so seek legal advice from a qualified professional as soon as possible. Police intervention. You can call the police to intervene if the child is becoming violent or threatening. As with most police and 911 calls, response time is based on the perception of immediate risk. If you explain that the threat of harm is clear and present, the response may be quicker. Sharon suggests telling the police as soon as possible, beforehand if possible, that the child has a mental disorder. Otherwise, they will assume this is just another rebellious teen getting out of hand, she says. Christine Adamek, in How to Live with a Mentally Ill Person, a Handbook of Day-to-Day Strategies, suggests that you immediately give police a crisis information form you have prepared ahead of time and kept in a safe place. You can find a copy of the form in her book. This form consists of a brief medical history, the diagnosis and its definition, the names of the child's doctors, names of the medications the child is taking. When the police arrive, they will first contain the situation and then discuss alternatives. If the crisis has passed, no further intervention may be made. If parents choose to press charges, the police will explain the procedure. According to Sharon, parents in her group who were concerned that the child would become violent after the police departed insisted that the authorities take the child to a safer environment. If the child's behavior continues to escalate and the child is not agreeable to treatment, he or she may be placed in juvenile detention overnight or be treated as allegedly mentally ill and placed under emergency psychiatric detention at the nearest county-operated hospital. Unsafe behavior is probably the most difficult aspect of caring about someone with BPD, but by planning for it and asking for outside help, you can diffuse its power and make it a lot less frightening. Chapter 9. Protecting Children from BPD Behavior. My narcissistic father never spoke to me about my mother's borderline behavior. He emotionally abandoned me when I was still in grade school. I wish he could have shown me unconditional love. I wish he had not left us alone with her and her moods. I am glad I was born, but sometimes I wish I wasn't. I am still on an emotional roller coaster. I am still that child looking for the unconditional love I never got. It is too late for me, but it is not too late for the other kids of BPs out there. Joan, BP. Many people with BPD never act out in front of their children. Others feel the urge but consciously make an effort to shield their children from their BPD behavior. Indeed, borderlines who are aware of their issues and work to overcome them can be excellent parents, better parents even than those who don't have the disorder but aren't as introspective. However, some people with BPD are unable or unwilling to adjust their behavior around their children. Perhaps they raise their voices more than they should, or they may experience states of depression that leave them unable to focus on their children as much as they would like to. At the other end of the spectrum, BPD can cause parents to be extremely abusive or neglectful. As you listen to this chapter, keep in mind that not all people with BPD act out toward their children. In addition, borderline behaviors directed toward children can vary greatly in their intensity, depending on the situation and the person involved. Typical problems with BP parents. As we said in Chapter 3, in some ways people with BPD are emotionally and developmentally similar to children. Like children, they may find it difficult to set aside their own needs to focus on those of others, may not be able to adequately consider the children's needs, feelings, and wishes, may be so preoccupied with their own emotional difficulties that they overlook their children's emotional needs, may also resent that the children's needs and feelings are different from their own and may therefore ridicule, invalidate, or dismiss them. If the child is happy when the parent is sad, this may be taken as a sign of disloyalty and insensitivity. Problem: difficulty separating relationships with children from problems with others. Some BPs find it difficult to separate their relationships with their children from their problems with others. For example, they may have had a hard time acknowledging that their children can have their own positive relationships with people the BP may not like. They may also try to get back at others through their children. Some BPs try to force children to choose between a relationship with them and being true to themselves. For example, they may tell a child he or she is selfish for wanting to spend time with friends. Problem: inconsistent parenting. Other BP parents are inconsistent with their parenting. They may vacillate between over-involvement and neglect, depending on their moods and emotional needs at the moment. They may only pay attention to the children when the kids are doing something to meet the borderline parent's needs. Some BPs try to cope with their own feelings of inadequacy by demanding that their children be perfect. Children may then feel worthless when something goes wrong. They may also try to get their emotional needs met through the children in ways that are inappropriate. Example given, having a 10-year-old sleep in the same bed or miss a classmate's birthday party because the BP doesn't want to be alone. Problem: unpredictable love. Some BPs alternate between taking too little and too much responsibility. For example, the BP may ignore the negative effects of his or her actions on the children, but then feel guilty or depressed when a child gets a bad grade. Other BPs may treat their children as if they are all good or all bad. This can hurt children's self-esteem and make it difficult for them to develop a consistent sense of self. BP parents may turn their love off and on. Their children thus learn not to trust them, and sometimes not to trust anyone else either. The BP's behavior may be so unpredictable that the child's focus becomes stabilizing the parent and trying to anticipate the parent's moods and actions, to the detriment of the child's normal development. Children of parents with BPD are often parentified, according to Kimberly Roth and Frieda B. Friedman, Ph.D., co-authors of Surviving a Borderline Parent, How to Heal Childhood Wounds and Build Trust, Boundaries, and Self-Esteem. That is, they learn to act as caretaker, perhaps for their siblings or for their parents. Many adult children have trouble recalling times when they just felt like fun-loving, silly kids. Problem: feeling threatened by a child's normal behavior. BP parents may feel threatened by children's normal behavior. As children grow and become more independent, the BP may feel abandoned and subsequently become depressed and may rage at the children. The BP may also unconsciously try to increase a child's dependence. Children thus may have a hard time separating from the parent or feeling competent at handling their own lives. When children become angry themselves, the BP may act in invalidating ways or rage back, thereby escalating the situation. Problem: inability to love unconditionally. Some BPs may have a hard time loving their children unconditionally. They may need the children to be perfect to make up for their own feelings of inadequacy. When children disobey, the BP may feel unloved, become angry or depressed, or withdraw his or her own love. Children learn that their parents' love is conditional. BPs may need to believe that their children are stupid, failures, or unattractive, so they don't have to be alone with similar feelings about themselves. Also, this conditional love allows the BP to feel more competent than someone else in his or her life. Problem: feeling threatened by child's feelings and opinions. BPs may need their children to be just like them and may feel threatened when children have different feelings and opinions. This parenting trait is common in people with another personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder. In Trapped in the Mirror, Adult Children of Narcissists, Elon Golem writes, "The pressure to conform to expectations is like the water in which a fish swims, so relentless and uniform that the child is hardly aware of it. These children feel as if they do not have the right to exist. Their selves have been twisted out of their natural shape since any movement toward independence is treated as a betrayal that can cause the parent irreparable harm." Though Golem writes about another disorder, the effect on children is similar. Some BPs may be physically or emotionally abusive or neglectful. Their impulse behavior may threaten the safety or well-being of their children, or they may hit or slap the children. The BP may also call the children damaging names or tell them outright that they are bad and unworthy. This sabotages the child's self-concept, self-esteem, and self-worth. In a less directly abusive but equally damaging way, the BP may be unable or unwilling to protect children from the abuse of others, either because he or she feels that doing so might threaten the BP's relationship with a partner, or because the BP is too consumed by his or her own problems. Children often interpret this as a reflection of their own lack of self-worth. Potential consequences of uncontrolled BPD behavior. In our interview with Andrew T. Pickens, M.D., he said, "Parents who verbally abuse their children will cause emotional damage. How much damage depends on many factors, such as the inherited temperament of the child, the amount of love and empathy given to the child by other adults, the age of the child, the younger the child, the more vulnerable they are, the intensity of the abuse, and other factors. Janet R. Johnston, Ph.D., the executive director of the Judith Wallerstein Center for the Family in Transition, said in an interview that the impact of BPD behavior on children varies according to the behavior of the BP parent and the temperament of the child. For example, if a BP parent who primarily acts in is matched with a child who has a caregiver personality, the child may feel responsible for keeping the parent alive and happy. Sela, BP. My 3-year-old, Bess, watched when the ambulance took me away after I had taken too many pills. She plays quietly with her toys when I lie in bed, so depressed that I can barely get up to feed her. When I even pretend to cry, her eyes well up with tears. Her first full sentence was, "Is Mommy okay?" When I am happy and beginning to pull out of the black pit, she grows and changes at lightning speed, as if to make up for the time she has lost trying to cope within my shadow. I am determined to get through this horror so I can be a real mommy, not a burden to her. A primarily acting-out parent combined with a more assertive child could create a unique type of chaos. When one BP mother raged, her son would write phrases like, "Shut up," and "I hate you" on pieces of paper and throw them at his mother. Many studies have shown that BPD tends to run in families. Whether the tendency is due to genetics or environmental factors, such as learning behavior from a parent with a mental illness like BPD, or some combination, is still not fully understood. Children who do not develop BPD themselves may still be at risk for developing BPD-related traits, such as difficulties regulating their emotions, problems with eating disorders, addictions, and substance abuse, tendencies to over-idealize or devalue people, feelings of shame, emptiness, and inferiority. This tendency may result from biological factors as well as environmental ones. A study published in the Journal of Personality Disorders found that BPD symptoms in a mother are related to interpersonal and family relationship problems and in a fearful attachment style in the BP's adolescent children, and that these children are at risk of psychological and social problems in settings outside the family, too. According to Mary Bell Fisher, Ph.D., when a parent has BPD, the normal formation of the child's identity may be derailed. In our interview with Fisher, she said, "The child's self becomes a mechanism to regulate the borderline parent rather than an internal cohesive event." In Surviving a Borderline Parent, Roth and Friedman write, "But who are you? As the child of a parent with BPD and or other emotional and cognitive difficulties, it may be surprisingly difficult to answer this question. You likely didn't have much mirroring or validation when you were young, which babies need in order to know where they stand in the world, that their feelings and observations and perceptions are healthy and normal. Without that early mirroring, it was difficult to see yourself, to know yourself. As a child, you wanted to please. If mommy wanted a little ballerina for a daughter, you tried hard to excel in ballet class, even though you really wanted to be out playing kickball or at home reading a book. If dad needed someone to guide him into the house when he was too drunk to find his way from the garage, you probably associated being a good person with downplaying your own feelings and needs." Elon Golem says, "To grow up as a whole person, children in their formative stages need the experience of genuine acceptance. They have to know they are truly seen and yet are perfect in their parents' eyes. They need to stumble and sometimes fall, only to be greeted by a parent's commiserating smile. Through parental acceptance, children learn that their isness, their essential selves, merit love." Similarly, Roth and Friedman list 6 seeds to grow a healthy child in Surviving a Borderline Parent. 1. Support. 2. Respect and acceptance. 3. Voice. 4. Unconditional love and affection. 5. Consistency. 6. Security. People with BPD likely didn't receive them or have them modeled by their own parents when they were children, so they didn't have an appropriate, healthy point of reference. And, with a fragile sense of self, they may not have been able to ask for help or accept their own shortcomings, the authors write. Children with BPD parents may also receive a distorted view of how interpersonal relationships work. For example, one of Fisher's patients feels that he can't become emotionally involved